shot in the dark, wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Back from the hiatus. Ooh, had some time off. It was, you know what? It was badly needed. I love doing this show, but I needed to let the energy build back up again. Now you're going to listen to today's show and you're going to be like, you let the energy build back up? Well, I did let the energy build back up and then I spent it somewhat. So I had no plans to travel whatsoever on this break. And I was just going to hang out, do some work that required, you know, longer, more thoughtful stretches of time, some writing stuff I need to be working on, some big picture stuff. And I did a lot of that. Cook some food, maybe get around, see some people, did a little bit of that. But had some surprise travel come up. So ended up on a plane and in a car when I planned on staying away from planes and cars. So that's part of what I'm going to talk about today. Other than that, had a great Christmas, went and saw my family here in Denver, bought my aunt. So my aunt's a non-denom charismatic Christian, and every evangelical or charismatic I know, that culture, they love Settlers of Catan. I don't know what it is, but that board game has this huge following in evangelical circles. And the more evangelical of a Catholic you are, the more likely are you love Settlers of Catan. And don't get me wrong, I love me some Settlers. But my family, so I thought Settlers, if they don't have it, good. But my family are like full on Star Trek nerds. Like my mom, my Uncle Steven, my Aunt Karen are all like, I mean, they're not like, they're not like a super nerd. Like they don't have like a uniform and go to conventions or something. I mean, not like, I'm not going to mention any names, but her initials are Jennifer Longworth, my producer. Speaking of Jennifer Longworth, that I haven't done the Pokemon report in a while. And so today on The Counter Position, it's time for we're going to have this late breaking news, the Pokemon report. Everyone has already forgot about Pokemon. And I'm fairly sure that Jennifer's still obsessed with Pokemon Go. That's been the Pokemon report. I mean, I haven't heard anything about Pokemon. I saw someone with Pokemon on their phone at a table over the weekend. And I was like, people still have that? That's so like last month. Anyway, so I bought my aunt the Star Trek version of Settlers of Catan. Now, shout out to Ken Kramer. Oh, sorry, I had a frog in my throat. Need some water. Shout out to Ken Kramer, my friend, for turning me on to the Star Trek version of Settlers of Catan. Now, talk about a Star Trek nerd. Ken Kramer is a serious Star Trek nerd. I'm fairly sure he has a uniform, too. So I think that's the line. You can have someone who's really, really in the Star Trek and they really love it. And they've got like some of the gear at their house or something, a t-shirt. They like own it on all the movies on DVD and the old series and stuff. But it's that uniform line. It's like, once you cross the uniform line, then you've gone from like regular Star Trek nerd to like over the line Star Trek nerd. Jennifer's gonna cut all of this out of the show and be like, hey, your show was like 5 minutes short after I cut out all the ripping on Star Trek people that have uniforms. You know, if they made a uniform in my size, you know. I mean, if I was going to get a Star Trek uniform, I'd want to be like Worf or something. I'd be like a Klingon or something. Something, you know. Yeah, who am I kidding? If I was in the Star Trek world, I would be like the fat kid who tried to go to Starfleet Academy and they made him run the open mile. Oh, wait a minute. I almost digressed. I'd be the fat kid that tried to go to Starfleet Academy, just really hoping to become a red shirt. And then I didn't make it. And then I'd see all these red shirts getting killed. And I go, man, well, at least I'm not a red shirt. Yeah, that's where I would be in the Star Trek universe. So that's a very long story. I bought my aunt Star Trek Settlers of Catan. All right. So, what was this travel I did? I ended up on an airplane. I planned not to be on an airplane. I went, the airplane ticket was one way. Ooh, intriguing. And yet I'm back in Denver. Ta-da. Implied narrative. I should have saved that to the end of the segment and be like, and yet I'm back in Denver and we'll tell you about it right after the break. So I probably mentioned this on the show. I'm sure I need a car, right? I needed a car. Yeah, there's another implied piece of the narrative. I had this 2002 Volkswagen Passat and I love this old Passat. I've had it since 2006 and I adore this Passat. And I wanted to keep it, but it has like 212,000 miles on it. And it has like $1,500 worth of stuff wrong with it. And so I just decided, look, the Passat has reached the end of the road. Unless I want to make the decision that like, no, I want to keep rebuilding and working on and own this Passat. I want this to be my car. But I was like, no, if I'm going to do that with an older VW, I'm going to get a van. I want a late 80s, early 90s VW van again. It'd be my third time's a charm. Sometime I'll tell you the saga of all the vans and what happened. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to let it go. So I'm going to donate it or sell it off for what I can get for it. So I just drove it into the ground. But like now the transmission's starting to slip a little bit. And so that's going to be expensive. I'm like, okay. So I've been saving money. And I was planning on saving money, and just keep driving this Volkswagen until it left me on the side of the road, call AAA, and then start shopping for a car. But I thought to myself, I said, self, do you really want to be on the side of the road? And so just for grins, I started poking around Facebook, seeing what I could get. You know, I wanted to get as low a mileage, as new of a year as possible for my money. And so I got on Facebook and I was like, all right, I don't want to spend any more than $5,000 unless it's an incredible deal. Anybody selling a car? And several people jumped in with some cars. A few of them were interesting, but my family in Kansas were selling a car. Now, my family in Kansas, if there's anything you can say about them, they're like gearheads. They're like super into cars. They love cars and engines and they baby and they pamper their vehicles. And so not only did I know that my family was going to be honest with me and not screw me over on some deal, I knew this car had been really, really taken good care of, right? You know, it had been treated very well. So they had a 2012 Chevy Cruze. Now it's not a fancy car. It's a little more plain Jane than what my last couple cars have been, but I got a 2012 Chevy Cruze. It still has 18,000 miles of powertrain warranty left on it. And I got it for a little over what I needed to spend. So, so I flew to Kansas City and bought a car off my family and drove it back. So, some of my show today is going to be about observations and stories from the road. I had planned on this episode you're listening to, the first episode back, being the very first on the road episode. I brought my gear with me. My plan was to do a show while driving back to Denver. And I just had insomnia the night before and slept into the last minute and just propped myself up with caffeine, put my foot on. Luckily, if you can just kind of use two fingers to keep it in the middle of the road and just, it doesn't, like, this new car doesn't have cruise control. So I had to actually like hold my foot on the pedal the whole time. But, you just, I mean, once you get outside of, once you get outside of Topeka, you just pretty much point it west and keep it between the lines. Not that, I mean, oh my gosh. I have to admit, you know, Western Kansas has a certain beauty to it, but, I was just like, every time, like you're an hour, two or three of that drive and you're just begging God in prayer. And instead of begging God for the things you normally beg God for, you're begging God for a tree, for a slight bend in the road. I was begging God for someplace to get a cup of coffee that wasn't a McDonald's. It's just out in the middle of nowhere and it's just flat and straight, which is good. I like that drive when I'm alert, when I can really do some powerful thinking, I can really get some good thinking. The shifting traffic patterns cause right brain thought to kick in, you know, and I like those long drives like that. I was just too tired and I had to get home and get this shop set up because I'd been gone all week and I had to get the shop ready to open again, go buy milk and stuff. And oh man, I just like drove half asleep across Kansas to drinking energy drinks when I couldn't get a cup of coffee worth drinking. So I want to talk a little bit about a few insights I had and experiences I had on the road, and then we'll see where it goes. You're listening to The Counterposition, first show of 2017. We'll be back right after the break.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. Only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right. You know what? I forgot to say Happy New Year's. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's. We're officially in Christmas. The last you heard me, we were still deeply in Advent. So Merry Christmas, but and we're still in Christmas. You know, it's a... Are we in the octave of Christmas still? I guess yesterday would have been the end of the octave of Christmas. Yeah. But we're still, Christmas is an interesting thing. You know, how long is it? Is it like 40 days? Is it like 12 to 12 days of Christmas? There's an octave of Christmas. You know, what's that about? But it is New Year's. And I want to talk about that a little bit, I think, today too. Yeah. This, instead of coming back with like all rested and fired up and ready to go, you're going to get today's going to be a chatty kind of show. Cause I just don't have the energy and the clarity to do tackle anything too big. Now I know I always say that. And then I end up on some big theological rant or some muse or something. It's possible. It could happen. All right. So, you know, it's interesting going back to the Midwest, flying into Kansas City, driving around small towns and stuff, which is kind of the culture. I was kind of back in the culture I'm from. Now I'm from Southern Missouri, so it's a little different culture, but I mean, small town Kansas, small town Missouri, not that different. Shouldn't be. They're next door to each other, right? I mean, and I really realized something about myself that I think that I mean, I knew and I've joked about, but I really am kind of the black sheep of my family. I say that in a sense that I'm the one that like left and went and got some classical education, and I drink wine and eat, you know, cook all kinds of cool food and stuff. And I'm the weirdo. I'm the person that's kind of the odd man out, you know. And it's being from that culture and looking around, it's like, you know, they did a, you know, how to say it? They did a study after the last election with, you know, with Trump and all that. And they said that, there was a great predictor of a county by county or an area by area, district by district. And the question was, did they have a Cracker Barrel or did they have a Whole Foods? That was the difference. If they had a higher amount of Cracker Barrels, and Cracker Barrel was very well represented in the demographic, it inevitably went to Trump. If there were a lot of Whole Foods around, they went over to Hillary. Now, I think it's ironic that what that says is, that speaks to the accuracy and the kind of the value of business in a sense, right? Because both of these companies have really, really learned how to do demographic studies and figure out where to put these things. And you know what? The owner of Whole Foods, I can't remember the guy's name, I have to look it up. He wrote a book, and he's not the super, he kind of defies, he's kind of business-wise and politically, he's interesting. He's kind of a free market kind of a guy. He wants people to be very conscious. I think it's called conscious capitalism, I think is what it's called. But I mean, he's an entrepreneur, and he thinks from that perspective, and he's an interesting guy. He's not your typical kind of like government should handle everything liberal. But yeah, so they broke that down to like, and then another one I heard about was by family or person. And if they watched Duck Dynasty, they like 97% voted for Trump. And if they watched Modern Family, they all voted for Hillary. So there's the breakdown. There's the Duck Dynasty / Cracker Barrel demographic versus the Modern Family / Whole Foods demographic. Now, I'm not a big fan of Modern Family. I've only watched a couple episodes, but I realize that I am from Duck Dynasty, Cracker Barrel, and I literally go to Whole Foods almost every day. Now, partially because I pass a Whole Foods on the way home. And so, and I try not to eat a ton of crappy fast food and stuff. So I'll go in there and get a little something. And instead of going through a drive through, I'll try to go into Whole Foods and get a scoop of rice and some vegetables and a piece of grill, you know, roasted chicken or something like that. But I'm definitely a great customer of Whole Foods. I realize that I am culturally, I am ideologically closer, I am ideologically closer to the Duck Dynasty Cracker Barrel world. And don't get me wrong, I love me some Cracker Barrel. I did not eat at Cracker Barrel this trip, but I did get mashed potatoes. I did get mashed potatoes and gravy and meatloaf at a truck stop on the way home. But just being in that environment, being around that, it's like we went to this, my family and I, we went to this microbrewery. It was kind of like a pub, kind of, you know, a big restaurant. But I mean, they've got like a bison ribeye and stuff. I mean, you know, and trout and stuff. I mean, this wasn't Applebee's, right? It was, and it's a microbrewery. I mean, so, I mean, I'm from Denver. I'm kind of in my element, right? You know, and I overheard the waitress saying something about, Brussels sprouts. And so it came time for me to order, and I ordered the barbecue combo, and I got some loaded mashed potatoes or something. And I had another side and I was like, hey, I heard you talking about these Brussels sprouts. How are those done? Are they like, kind of like, you know, crispy kind of Brussels sprouts, or what's with them? Is there a glaze on them or something? And she was like, crispy Brussels sprouts. No, they're just like, that's in our mix, in our veggie mix. Like they had like the mixed vegetables and one part of them was, and she was like, how do you make a Brussels sprout crispy? And I said, oh, well, you just cut them all in half. You kind of trim them, cut them in half, maybe throw some white onion in, a little bit of olive oil, salt and pepper, kind of roast them off till they're kind of caramelized and kind of crunchy. And then there's a lot of sauces you could do. Fish sauce is really good. I like sriracha with bourbon and maple syrup as a glaze. I mean, you could do a lot with them. And she looks at me and she goes, where are you from? I'm just like, I'm just gonna roast some Brussels sprouts. Is that really that fancy? And I realize that just, I think that I have been in California and in the West and in these kind of places long enough that I've lost context. I've lost context about who I am and where I'm from. It's like, I had a lot of moments like that. Yeah, I'm definitely, so I think it describes a lot. I am from Duck Dynasty and I carry some of the presuppositions of the worldview underlying Duck Dynasty, but I'm definitely in Cracker Barrel. I'm definitely I'm culturally over in the Whole Foods demographic. I'm culturally Whole Foods and I'm ideologically Cracker Barrel. That's not completely true, but that's kind of what's going on there. So that was interesting. I had a good time in Kansas though. I got this car. And, you know, the car has got a stick shift. First time I've had a stick shift in a really long time. I had stick shifts. I had a couple of stick shifts growing up. I had a van that was a stick shift. I learned how to drive on a stick shift. My mom's little yellow Cavalier from the mid 80s that I learned. I didn't learn to drive on it. I drove my, I learned to drive in my car, which was a 65 Ford Galaxy 500 with a 352. Thing was four doors. I swear it was carved out of cast iron. This car, it was the heaviest thing. It was indestructible. I once drove this car, the 65 Ford Galaxy. I drove it at about 5-6 miles an hour into the side of the wall of the Deloge 7-Eleven in Deloge, the 7-Eleven in Deloge, Missouri. I had 5 minutes of break from super hot summer marching band practice, and I wanted a super big gulp Mountain Dew. And so I just like gunned it. And I took that sliding around the corner, you know, and I got down and I pulled up to the 7-Eleven to the side and I overshot it. My foot slipped off the brake and I just like slammed in the side of 7-Eleven. It shook bottles and stuff on the inside of the building. It didn't even scratch the chrome on my Galaxy. That's how they used to make cars. Now, of course, you would wreck a car like that and everyone inside would die. But the people who came and found you would drive the car home and give it to whoever was alive at home at your house. Now they've taken, ironically, NASCAR technology, and these modern cars, when you hit them, they fly apart. They let all the compression kind of tear the car up and make it fly apart, but you're on the inside in this little impact zone and you're safe. But anyway, so I learned to drive a stick, and I used to borrow and drive my mom's Cavalier in high school all the time. And I think I probably burned a clutch out of that learning how to drive on it, if I remember right. Mom, if mom's listening, she can correct me or let me in on that. Oh goodness, we're out of time. We're gonna go to the break. I told you this was going to be a chatty kind of episode. I'll get meaty again. I haven't watched any news or read anything, so this is just all going to be personal experience today. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll see you on the other side.
Then how we crave a hanging and it's dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't sting, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so before the break, I was telling you that I bought this new car, and I got a, it's got a stick. It's got a six-speed manual transmission, so you have to push in the clutch and shift and everything. You know, and here's a shout-out to Ann Breiling. Ann Breiling, my friend in Santa Cruz, loves the stick shift. She gets, I mean, her brand, she has like a brand new Jetta, or like Jetta, I think it's a Jetta, and it's got a stick shift. She always buys stick shifts. And she lives near San Francisco too, which is just crazy because there's really big hills. Anyway, so I have gotten very attached to having an automatic. But you know what? I have to admit, I've kind of fallen. It's like riding a bicycle. I'm right back into the stick shift, and I've got it like, it makes perfect sense to me now, you know, I don't have to think about it. And I like it. It's like I get into a little more flow while I'm driving. Cause you're physically in it, you know, instead of just, you know, just sitting in a chair that's inside of a little metal room, and that little metal room is just going down the road, and you can steer the room or slow it or speed it up, but you're just kind of, you're just in this little room, and the room does all the work, and it moves down to the strip of concrete. There's something about being physically involved in the changes in the car, the movement of the gears, and the way that it feels, and how much torque it has because you've downshifted to get around someone or something. It's a good feeling. It's a more visceral way of driving. And I'm not saying that it is kind of hard. There were several times I was like trying to look at directions on my phone or something, or had a cup of coffee in my hand, and suddenly I need to shift without warning. And I'm like, you can't, but it's good. It kind of pulls you out of that whole, I'm in this room. This room is inside this thing. This room has wheels on it. I do other things in the room while this room is going someplace else with me in it, into more like I am in a partnership with this machine, and I'm moving, and it's responding to my movements. You know, that's a little bit of a different thing. You know, this is going to sound strange, but it's almost like, there were moments like when you're shifting and you're kind of like getting into traffic and you're, you know, moving around, you're shifting, you're slowing down, you're downshifting, and you're kind of doing that. You kind of get in that flow. It's almost the same kind of flow you get in when you're swimming. And I love to swim, and I'm realizing that I forgot to put my gym bag with my trunks and my stuff in the back of the new car. And now I can't go to the gym on the way home and swim. That sucks. I really, really was looking forward to hot tub, cold shower, swim some laps. So anyway, there you go. It's more visceral. It's more, you know, and I was thinking about, there's a book called Flow by Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. I worked really hard to learn how to say Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. This book Flow, really worth reading if you've never read it. And there's this flow state you get in where you're kind of like in it and you're kind of like involved in it. And you know, driving a stick shift, I get flow in the car more often, I think. Yeah. So I'm Ann Breiling might be onto something. Shout out to good old Ann Breiling, not good young Ann Breiling. That was mean. I didn't mean to say old, like you're old. She's not old. She's younger than me. She's quite young. Good Ann Breiling. So shout out to the lovely and talented Ann Breiling and her love of stick shifts. all right. So this would not be the counterposition if I didn't talk about coffee and religion and the relationship therein. But So I went over to, this is a little bit of a rant. Not a big rant, but in general, dear Catholic churches of the world, you know, people travel. And if you don't update masstimes.org or the Mass Times app, or at least update your website with more detail and update your like your little voice message on your phone, then we have a hard time figuring out the changes in your schedule. And people travel in like holiday land, and the changes in the schedule are more likely to be experienced. They're more likely to happen and need to be communicated during the holidays, because that's when people are traveling, right? Now, I get it. Masstimes.org. Shout out to masstimes.org. I love masstimes.org. I don't like the Mass Times app very well, but the actual website on my phone, I use the actual website in the browser, and it works way better because you can find like just confession on just a certain day or something like that. It's just easier. But Mass Times is kind of like the Yelp of religion, in the sense that they set up this website that your information is on, and now you have to kind of maintain that because people find you and want to accept the information that's on there, that and so that they can interact with your business. Now, on one side, you're like, hey, well done. I love Yelp. I get a lot of customers off Yelp. But that's like a second website that I have to like now maintain and fix the hours on and all that stuff. So masstimes.org is kind of like that for churches, and churches, God love them, are not always the most organized of entities. And over the course of my travels over the whole break, there was several times that I was like, masstimes said one thing, it wasn't clear on the website, and I showed up and there was a miss in the schedule. So I went over to Lawrence, and now their website was clear. It said New Year's Eve, 10 a.m., but it says Sundays, 11 a.m. And New Year's Eve was being celebrated legally. So I just didn't read it close enough, and I went over for the 11 a.m. Mass, and it was already letting out when I got there. In Lawrence. Now, I really wanted to go to Lawrence because, if I'm not mistaken, that is where the, that's KU, right? And that's the school where they had the integrated humanities program with John Senior and all that, which I heard is firing back up again. I think it might be this new program that's at that Catholic campus center where they're doing some accredited classes and stuff. I'm a big fan. That is a model we're going to try to build in Flint, Michigan. So I went over there and I missed Mass, and I didn't know anyone, though I did see a staff poster, and my friend Stacy Kretters, that I didn't know, was now working in Lawrence. So shout out to Stacy Kretters, who's working in Lawrence, Kansas now. But I was stuck in town, and I went to, I went and got some Mexican food, and then I needed coffee. So I got a shout out. I went to Alchemy Coffee in Lawrence, Kansas. If you're anywhere in the Lawrence, Kansas, kind of that area, even if you wanted a little road trip from Kansas City, you're over in Topeka, anywhere, Alchemy Coffee was a great shop. Very small. And a super cool, like bacon, egg kind of biscuit counter on the other end. And they did their own bakery and stuff. But they just had, I guess they got voted, like Kenneth Davids over at coffeereview.com gave them third best cold brew in the nation. I had a bottle of their cold brew. It was great. It was really good cold brew. I don't know that I would call it the third best in the nation, but it was really good. And their shop, it just goes to show you how coffee people are so interesting. This shop, the guy that owns it is like a woodworker. And all of the shop, all the beautiful wood, it's all this gorgeous custom furniture and custom counters and this really beautiful mounted wall kind of case with the Kyoto cold brew in it. they were all made out of the same tree. Everything he had made the entire shop out of the same big tree. And they were all, and it was all really beautiful. And they had a nice little pour over bar going. I got a beautiful Rwandan. The baristas were kind of telling me about the coffees based on tasting notes and stuff. And they just did a great job of recognizing everyone and talking them through the menu and answering their questions and finding something for them. And it was just everyone was really friendly, just a super good vibe, really good coffee house. So, shout out to Alchemy Coffee in Lawrence, Kansas. And if you're anywhere in the area, go check out Alchemy. Really killer shop. Giant fan. It seems like a nice campus. Nice little town. I like Lawrence. We used to go to the Bottleneck in Lawrence every once in a while when I lived in Columbia, Missouri, back in the day to see bands that we'd missed the Blue Note or we liked the Blue Note. Oh, goodness. End of the break. All right, let's come back for the final lap in a second. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so after going to Alchemy Coffee and missing mass, I had to go to another mass someplace else, and that was uneventful. It was nice, nice people, nice church. But I went to I remember what I want to talk about. So coffee. So I went to PT's. Now PT's I've been a fan of for a very long time. I checked out PT's coffee a long time ago, and I'd had some of their coffees on my bar out in Missouri, and I had stopped every time I come, you know, east west like that through Kansas. They're in Topeka, and my family lives outside of Topeka. I always stay with them, and so we always go to PT's. And that PT's on what do I call it, College Hill? It's right there by Washburn University. What a great shop. Just a really beautiful shop. Lots of custom. They have some of the coolest benches. They're benches made out of like a squared off, like basically like a log. And they're just like rough hewn, smooth, shellacked. Like if you took a log and squared it and sanded it, then just like, stained it and glazed it and all that, and then put some little legs, little small legs on it. That's what they're beautiful, cool, custom furniture, really nice bar, really great branding, and just beautiful coffee every time I go. Good place to hang out. It's kind of a cool location. It's in the bottom of like an apartment complex right there by the university so it's probably mostly college students. I mean, if I was living in Topeka, I would try to rent one of the apartments above PT's Coffee. That'd be great to have that good of a shop right downstairs. I would never sleep. I would just be wired on caffeine all the time. So I went in and I had a situation. So I sit down and there is these two girls talking to a third girl. And the two girls who are talking had name tags on. I started I look at them. I'm kind of listening. And they're basically like, they seem like they're like focused, like Fellowship of Catholic University students. Two girls kind of tag teamed up, talking and answering the questions of a third girl. But they were like basic white girl Mormon edition. These girls were just like, these were like pumpkin spice latte impersonified basic white girls. And they were straight up Mormons. And they were talking to this girl, and the girl seemed like she was probably, I overheard her. She didn't have any accent. But she looks probably like second, third generation Latina. And I heard her talking about purgatory and explaining what they believe. So she was some kind of a Catholic, But, you know, and so I'm sitting there listening and I couldn't even ride. I couldn't even work. I so bad wanted to just like run over there and just like interrupt and go, no, it's so funny. But I want to talk about this for a second. I'm just going to get on a little bit of a little bit of a tangent here. So what they said was, you know, Christ came to the earth and he appointed these apostles, right? And then, you know, that time came to an end. And then the apostles, starting with Joseph Smith, came back to the earth. And it's like, so here's the thing is that you hear the Mormons say this, you hear the Jehovah's Witnesses say it, but you hear other people say, there's this idea that there was this great falling away, right? That basically Jesus, the apostles, everything you read in the scripture, and then the moment the scripture's done, everything goes to hell in a handbasket. It became, you know, got syncretists or got married to some kind of like Greek philosophy. Mostly they blame that on the Catholic Church. That's when the Catholic Church came in, was when they took over the real church. And then there was no record of the real church on earth until our guy, be it Martin Luther, John Calvin, Zwingli, you know, Wesley, up to Joseph Smith, you know, the Bible fell out of the sky and he caught it or something. It's like, and when I get arguing with my friends that are Protestants or evangelicals about the early church and they start talking about like this great falling away or something, I'm like, okay, that might have happened, but just so you know, you're making the exact same argument as the Mormons at this point, you know, which, you know, that's, I'll leave the Mormon thing alone for another show. We can talk about Mormonism sometime, or not. It's just interesting though, but let's think about this. This wasn't what I planned on doing. I planned on talking about, driving across Kansas and listening to classic rock radio and dancing in the car to keep awake and all this, and the fine balance and art of strategic caffeination on a road trip. But I want to talk about this instead. This is more interesting. So Christ there is incarnate on the earth in a culture, in a moment in history, right? There, this stuff gets captured and talked about through story and through literary genre and stuff like that. But we have to remember, and we should understand this as Catholics, the reality of the event comes first, right? There was the fact of the incarnation. The second person of the Trinity became man at a particular address. And he lived at a particular address, and his dad had a carpenter shop or did carpentry work. His mom cooked stuff. He had a favorite dish. He would smell it when he was out in the carpenter shop and go, mmm. And his human imagination would think about the last time he ate it and remember how good it was and couldn't, you know, would be like, oh, that's going to be great to go in and eat that thing my mom made. Even though in his divine nature, he's eternal and outside of time, right? I know it blows your mind, right? We're not going to solve the incarnation. But this happened. And then as he grows up, he starts his ministry. And people engage him. People encounter him. And so we tend to think it's like, oh, you know, it's just like these stories. But no, there was a dude named Lazarus. In the same way that you have a name, Lazarus had a name. In the same way that you have this story about like, oh yeah, you know what? We were camping one time and I got really hurt and we had a hard time and we've got me out and and I had to go to the hospital and then I had to do physical therapy and I came over, but it was something I overcame. This guy Lazarus has this story that's like, yeah, you know, I died. And then afterwards I like woke up and I could see through the bandages and I like, had to like push my way out. And I heard my friend Jesus's voice, and the, like my sisters were like crying and stuff. I mean, there's moments there, these events, these realities get reported in stories, but they happened first, right? There was a basic reality that existed, right? St. Paul did all those travels. You could, if we knew it, if we had perfect knowledge, we could tell you the address of all, we could go show you on Google coordinates every house he slept in along the way and trace back the lineage of everybody who ever like gave him something to eat. This physically happened in the world. So Christ was an event that happened in history. Right? The apostles were in history. These communities, these groups of people who banded together after hearing and believing the message of Christ, that were converted to this presence that was in him. They existed, and Paul's going along and he puts Timothy over this church and this other person over this. He's visiting these churches, and there's churches and they have leaders, right? And those leaders get replaced by other leaders. Right. So everybody that you see in scripture that Paul's writing a letter to or talking to, they got replaced when they died. Right. So let's say Timothy dies and someone replaces him and starts preaching the gospel. He is surrounded by a bunch of people who saw the Lord. Who saw Christ when he was on the earth. And then later on, after that guy dies and gets replaced, and these people's like grandkids or the young kids that are kind of like working things or whatever, they grew up in a world full of firsthand witnesses, to the point like you get to Irenaeus in the mid second century, and he can say, I am Irenaeus, who was a Polycarp, who was of John. Right. So he's that direct of a connection, and we're deep into the second century. So no, there was not a great falling away. There was not some big change. If when you read the early church and you read the second century, and you read Ignatius, you read Irenaeus, you read the Apology of Justin Martyr, you read the Didache, you read those things, and they look really, really, really Catholic, and they make reference to doctrines that are Catholic. When they find catacombs and there's Marian paintings on the walls of the catacombs, when they find an old prayer directed to Mary for intercession, that's because that's what they believed. But it's not because it fell away and everybody who had heard and seen the Lord didn't say anything for some reason. It was because that's what they were always believing. So no, it doesn't matter. So if the Mormons come to your door and tell there's a great falling away, make them explain how that worked in history, in the moment, in community, because it didn't happen. You are taking part in the same faith that Christ left his apostles, that Paul spread all over the place, that St. Peter and St. Paul died for. You're in that same faith right now. All right. There was a really big tangent, but a kind of fun one. All right. That's a very counterposition way to have end the first show of the new year. You're listening to The Counterposition. Let's pull the plug and pop the cork on another episode. We'll see you next time.
I'll take your place, marble stone. I'll take your place, marble stone.